Stacey's on. Turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time with Stacey's on.
Welcome back to the show. Stacey,
yeah.
We spent an unfortunate amount of time yesterday talking about injuries, injury updates, mm-hmm. injuries to teams that aren't even the Seahawks. What is the situation today so we can dispense with this quickly and get on to more fun things?
Okay. The Seahawks have called up two players from their practice squad. I've had a couple people texting in to our show over on 710 ESPN asking if one of those players is going to be Shaquem Griffin. He's a linebacker who was a fan favorite. He was not called up from the practice squad, so he remains with Seattle, but at least right now, it doesn't look like he's going to be on the active roster playing this weekend. Instead, all right. they called up someone to help on the defensive line and then a defensive back. As far as just directly replacing Bruce Irvin, another fan favorite guy who came back for another year with Seattle and then suffered a torn ACL this past Sunday. Looks like they're going to have their first round pick, Jordan Brooks. I don't know if you remember anything about him way back. Feels like 10 years ago.
Out of Texas, right?
Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I remember him being really considered an exceptionally good athlete, mm-hmm. like a guy who actually could play pretty soon, apparently sooner than we expected.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was expecting him to get, you know, playing time this year, but to be starting at one of the linebacker spots, we don't know if it's going to be at the weak side or at the Sam spot where Bruce Irvin would play. But he will, you know, be starting with the linebacker group this Sunday. So you're going to have one rookie who's already been out there, but one rookie getting quite a few more snaps. And then you might also have your, I believe, fifth round pick, Allerton Robinson, who's hasn't played in either of the last two games. He's been a healthy scratch, meaning someone that's healthy but just not on the active roster because you can only have so many players right. from your 53-man play on game day. He may be playing this week. It looks like Rasheem Green may not make it.
Oh, wow. Well, so this is going to be against the Cowboys.
This really
is
good offense.
Very tough. This is going to be, I think, maybe essentially an Arena League football game then, correct?
You mean like a 50 to 50?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 65 to 58
yeah.
or something like that?
The hope is that the defense for Seattle is going to start to come together, right? What you're facing with this team that you haven't played before is not just a dynamic passing attack, but suddenly a run game with one of the league's best running backs in Ezekiel Elliott. You face Todd Gurley, who used to be a great running back, and he's still, you know, getting his legs under him over in Atlanta. He played well against Seattle, but Ezekiel Elliott, it's a different story.
Right.
So they're going to have their hands full for sure versus Dallas. I'm still going to pick them when we do our picks on Friday. I'm still going to pick Seattle to win. I just think they have the better offense and maybe have the edge on defense with Wagner and Adams, but it's going to be tough.
So are there any last question regarding the defense, because I think that's everybody's first and second and probably third concern. Are there any worthwhile free agents floating around out there that they're just not yet ready to bite the bullet on and sign, or is there just no one out there?
You know, look, no one knows this team better than general manager John Schneider or head coach Pete Carroll. I have to think there are reasons that they are not signing a guy like, you know, Snacks Harrison or Clay Matthews to come in and help their defensive line. Those guys remain free agents. I don't know how long they're going to be free agents with the rash of injuries that we saw this past weekend around the league. I think there are some teams that start reaching out to guys that, you know, have maybe former stars that have been injured that are just, you know, sitting out there right now. Devonta Freeman was one of those guys where he was released in Atlanta. He was also someone used to be, you know, had some great times in Atlanta and then kind of, you know, fell off in production.
Right.
He's now with the Giants, who lost Saquon Barkley. So I think that there might be some teams that come in and come calling for those two guys. But I've been slightly surprised to see that one of them isn't Seattle,
right.
considering the help they need. But I have to think that there's reasons behind that.
I would think so. I mean, unless they're just sort of maxed out that giant Russell Wilson contract and a couple of other big ones, probably always have them thinking twice, like, mm-hmm. do we need to spend another $2 or $3 million right now? All right. So what is this? What I've been hearing through the grapevine a little bit on the police scanner is issues regarding Jake Heaps
and
his interactions with law enforcement,
as
which apparently is not a conventional place for him to do.
No, as you know, Jake is the bad boy of our show.
That says a lot about your show.
So Jake, so I get into work the other day, and we do a Microsoft Teams call for like an hour or so before the show. Mm-hmm. And so I walk into the studio we're in right now, and I'm on the phone, and normally it's me and Jake, like the whole show's on. It's just the producer, Kyle. And I'm like, Kyle, where's Jake? And Kyle's like, oh, he isn't here right now. Also, he's going to have to be out of the show for a little bit later today. And I was like, why? Like, I had no idea this was happening. Kyle goes, oh, he's got court. And I was like, what? If anyone knows Jake Heaps, like, he is the literal last person I would expect to be involved.
If you look up
the law at all,
clean cut. In the Oxford English Dictionary, it's literally a picture of Jake.
It's Jacob Tyler Heaps. Exactly. That's exactly who it is. And so it turns out that it's...
And not court for jury duty.
No.
He's actually...
You are before a judge.
Yeah, he is before a judge.
Yeah. So it turns out that Jake got into... We were teasing him about it. It was a very small thing. Like, he had a ticket he didn't know about or something. And so he obviously paid it off and was like, my bad. But he still had to do the procedural. Like, you still have to go there and show up and say, like, okay, I did this and here's my fine, whatever. Right. It wasn't actually that big of a deal. But because we are all jerks, like, we were all making fun of him all day long. Like, me and Mike Salk were giving him a really hard time, making him think, like, you might be going to jail, man.
Explain, because you explained off air a little bit. So how did he find out that he had an issue with his license?
He hit a deer. And
then the deer's family sued.
Exactly. That's what I asked. I was like, did the deer sue you? Like, what's going on? And he was like, no. So, you know, I don't have my phone on me the other day. I have no idea. And then I get this voicemail when I check it. Voicemail number one right here.
Hey, it's Stacy. Sorry I missed you. Leave a message and I'll give you a call back.
You have a collect call from...
3-time state champion quarterback Jake Heaps.
In the Cowlitz County Jail. Do you accept these charges?
So in this not at all doctored or fake voicemail that I have right here, it's just, you know, you find out that Jake's, you know, over there in jail, and now he's out. He's great. He's fine now. But we were giving him a hard time about it during the show.
Well, so now that Jake has been sprung, it's a term, and then you've dealt with his bail bonds agent. So when Jake was trying to contact you from prison... regarding his suspended license. He's settled up now.
He's
There's no more issues anymore.
It was the most mundane thing, and it was just because it was one of those things.
It's probably
where,
FT. I think I got one of these once before, a failure to appear, because you get a ticket. You're actually supposed to go to court to adjudicate the ticket. I got one of those. I got pulled over in Yosemite National Park for the same thing, for an FT.
I think you mean Yosemite.
I'm sorry. Yosemite. Or Yosemite, I think is what it was. Ah. Yosemite Park. And actually got... It was actually a cascading series of events. I ended up in jail.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so... Actually, the funny thing is, I hadn't told this story in years, and I told it yesterday, I think, on Kyra Nights. I am driving through... I am speeding through Yosemite National Park, the valley, late at night.
You could hit an elk going that fast.
You could hit an elk going, or a bear there going that fast. And, I mean, the speed limit there, I think, literally was something like 15 miles an hour. And
crazy.
I was probably doing 30.
Yeah.
And I am with my new girlfriend, her brother.
This
does factor into it. I'm actually driving her car. A coworker of mine, my girlfriend, who is a Sacramento Bee reporter, myself, I'm a Modesto Bee reporter, and her brother,
you guys are smart.
Who's in it? Modesto Bee reporter. I'm trying to get to our, because it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. We want to get to sleep because we're going to hike Half Dome. We're going to climb Half Dome the next day, and I'm going a little fast through the valley, but not that bad. I get pulled over. The guy was probably 15, the federal agent who pulled me over.
Like, looks age 15?
Yeah.
And he's a horse and buggy. He was like,
and
no,
he
sir.
Was like, finally got a ticket to give to somebody in the
like,
middle.
No,
like, who does traffic enforcement at 1 o'clock in the morning? There's literally no one awake. The owls aren't even awake.
Yeah.
And the guy yanks me out of the car, gets my license, realizes I have this FTA. I had not paid it was something like a minor traffic speeding ticket.
It's one of those random things where you're like, wait, what?
What exactly? It was from 2 years earlier in a city called Oakdale, California. And so I am like, oh, fair enough. Sorry about that. I'm trying to. And he's like, and then he starts asking me these weird questions. And then he
was
asks
like, are you on the lam?
He asks if I have a tattoo on my shoulder out of the blue, and I'm wearing a shirt so he can't see anything on my shoulder, and I say, well, I do, I have one, like, it's a tattoo older than you, and so I say yes, and immediately the whole thing changes. He puts me up against the car.
Whoa.
Cuffs me. My girlfriend's like, and her brother, like, looking back, because the spotlight's on their car, right, just went in front. They're looking back through the windows like, what's going on here? I get shoved into the police car, you know, like, hand on the back of the head, put in the back of the car. They get out of the car. He's like, get back in the car. And he allows them to...
But it was like, get back in the car!
Exactly.
He's still a child.
He allows them to follow him. I get taken to Yosemite Jail. I'm booked into Yosemite Jail. And I'm like, what is going...
Yosemite Jail. I wonder what that's like.
It's not. I can tell you exactly what it's like. It's one cell. It's actually rather pleasant. And they take my belt and my shoes so I don't hang myself, over a traffic violation. And then they start running out. They're talking to me. I can talk to where the counter is because it's a relatively small room, but I'm in a cage. They start running out my rap sheet. And it is like, I don't know. It's a dot matrix pinner. It's going for like a minute.
What?
It is like 4 feet long. And then they start going through my wallet. And then they realize that
they have the wrong Mike Lewis.
They have the wrong Mike Lewis.
Oh my God!
And they see my press ID card. I am literally the reporter who covers Yosemite National Park. And the whole tenor changes. And immediately they're like, well, I think maybe we made a mistake. There's a guy, you know, blah, 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 blah.
And
they still don't know. They are still outside in the lobby, not knowing why I got rolled up. And he just flew in. He has never met me before. Like, so this is a real winner that you dated, that you started dating here, Nancy, because that was my girlfriend at the time.
Hold up. There was another Mike Lewis that had a really long rap sheet and also a tattoo in a similar area.
Yes, and his name actually was Mike Loomis. He would go by Mike Lewis. And so that was one of his aliases. Not really creative as far as I'm concerned. And and so they decide that, because I'm roughly the same size, same blah, blah, blah.
Right, same features.
I don't think if they'd asked me what the tattoo was or taken a look at it, they would have seen... So,
it's the spelling of your actual name.
No, it's actually nerdier than that. It is actually... I don't even know.
You have to say it.
I have to say it now.
You've gone too far.
So when I was in college journalism, I wanted a...
Times New Roman.
I wanted a Times New Roman tattoo. I've got the little box in the corner of the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print. I've got that tattooed on my shoulder plate.
Stop!
And I'm guessing...
Can you imagine?
I'm guessing that there's not a lot of felons with this particular tattoo.
That's what you
think. I could
be
wrong about this. I could be wrong. It could be some sort of, like, hardcore OG who really likes the New York Times.
You want to know...
It's possible.
You want to know the real repercussions for not following the AP style guide?
Exactly.
Yeah, we got people to send
exactly,
out for that.
Exactly. So anyway, they get much friendlier at this point. I get sort of booted out the door with my... Literally still holding my shoes and my belt. And they're like, what is going on here?
I hope this cop was like, can you actually give me a ride to high school?
We finally get to sleep at like 4 o'clock in the morning. We have to get back up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do the half dome, because it's a long, long
slog. Does she think you're really cool now, or is she terrified?
It's funny. I've had these encounters with law like twice at the very beginning of relationships, both of which were mistaken identity. My girlfriend now, Mary, we've been together a long time. I got served a summons that was I was like, what is going on here? And it turns out the Social Security number was wrong. The private investigator had done kind of lousy research, and they served me a summons, and she had just moved in with me, like, oh, this is good news, you know. So I get out of jail very quickly. We end up hiking Half Dome, lovely day, getting a Cotton Eye Whiteout on the way down, which was a little bit nerve-wracking, but it was a good overall. It sort of set the relationship off on a really positive note.
Wow.
Anyway, so that's my jail story.
I learned a lot. Well, that's not your only jail story, because I also heard you say before we started talking that you were getting letters from jail. And when I heard
that's
that,
true.
I thought of like fan accounts and people writing you from jail. normally the opposite that you would say.
I got a couple of different Jay-Lazos. So my late brother-in-law, who was a spectacular guy, my sister and he were married 30 years. He ended up dying from complications of Hep C about 5 years ago.
That's sad.
He courted my sister from jail, which is a separate story. I'll tell you, we don't have enough time for that one. But my so as a newspaper reporter, you get a lot of letters from at the time you got a lot of letters from inmates because they would want you to take up their cause and their case. And there's some really legitimate ones that and it's hard to sort out which ones are people just shining you on and which ones are real. I mean, like the Innocence Project, I'm sure, gets millions of these things a year. But you would get a bunch, and the way you could always tell that it was a prison, because sometimes the return address was not clear or the postmark wasn't clear, is that they got very little paper allotment, and they would write edge to edge on the entire paper. You would get literally 100% of the available white space is filled with ink. No margins, no anything, just like all in very small, usually in very small letters, because if they got just a single sheet of paper, and sometimes some of the prisons in California are pretty hardcore about that kind of stuff, they would have to write everything on two sides.
That's kind of sad. I feel like
it's super sad. Like
that I would make
egregious.
You restrict. Like if you're in prison, like I feel like you should be allowed to read and write. Like those are things that could like potentially be therapeutic or whatever. Did you ever get a letter where you were like, okay, I actually believe this person?
I got several. I got two that I ended up referring to attorneys, and I don't know what happened. Two that seemed like, I mean, you know, really good liars and really good truth tellers can do one thing similar. They put in a lot of detail. Mm-hmm. I mean, really accomplished liars are very good at that, too. They put in a lot of detail. So you think, oh, that's got to be true because listen to all the detail. So but every now and then you get a sense of one like, oh, this seems and you know, and what we know now. Right. I would say that I probably got more that were maybe legit than I realized at the time. I mean, I'm like 23 years old.
So at the time, you're like, well, maybe that's your story. But now you realize that like, oh, no, there's a problem.
Yeah. And they also the funny thing also is that some of the prisons in California, like the one near Modesto is the acronym is DVI. It's Dual Vocational Institute. Now, the reason they name it that is so you can actually put it because it's a prison industries prison. In other words, they manufacture stuff there like office furniture for state offices and things like that. But it's also so you could put that on a resume and it doesn't say prison.
Oh.
But even so, now it's sort of irrelevant because background checks are so much easier that actually, because they actually didn't want to name it prison, so it actually wouldn't be harmful to your potential job searches later
on. I have a related question, if we have time.
Sure. Yes, we do.
I only just thought of this when you said that truth tellers and great liars are both really good at giving a lot of detail. Do you think you've ever actually met a psychopath?
Yeah, I mean, I've interviewed a couple in prison, but I would, like a sociopath?
Yes. Do you think you've met someone where you left, like they're,
notwithstanding?
No. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, if anyone listening to you, do you ever feel like you've left a conversation and you've thought maybe even like years later, I think this person was a sociopath. Like this is someone who like may have ended up being a serial killer in some other instance, but like they have that kind of mindset. Like maybe they have like an antisocial, you know, personality disorder. And not every single person that deals with that stuff ends up, you know, committing violence. Clearly, there are many people that are like perfectly functioning members of society. But I do think it's like we throw it around, but I think it's rare. But I wonder if as a reporter talking to so many people throughout your life in interviews or for whatnot, if you ever felt like I might have actually met someone once and it's just another level of like psychosis. This is so off base.
No. I think I probably have. I think you probably have. I think sometimes you know, when you get that, even when you're talking to someone who's pleasant, but you get that like weird feeling in your gut.
Yeah. Like this, a little
there's
detachment.
Something is off here. We're not quite communicating very effectively. And I'm not sure that this communication is really the point of why they're here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's eerie.
Those are eerie things. And I've always actually given women, I think, more credit than men for picking up on that very early, because I think it's definitely an evolved survival instinct. Mm-hmm. I think that because there's also the physical safety thing as well in more situations, I would say that you probably have, you know, and your gut is probably, if not right, at least somewhat right.
Yeah.
You know,
there are those interactions, though, where you have with people. I haven't had many of them, but you wonder, like, is this someone that is a movie type.
Yeah.
I would love to talk to a psychologist about this. This stuff is fascinating to me. But someone who is an actual sociopath.
All right, tell you what, we're gonna make it a point to.
Can we?
I'm gonna find somebody that you and I are gonna sit down with.
I am so fascinated by this.
And discuss how do you find out, what are the 10 questions to ask a sociopath to determine that they are
question number one
a sociopath. All right, we'll get to that coming up. We will be taught. Well, of course, we'll be doing final thoughts, and we will be having. Oh, Rachel Bell will be up in just a few minutes after the break.
You can ring my bell.
Welcome back to Cairo Night. Rachel, the...
You sounded like you weren't sure.
No,
Cairo Night. I don't know.
Maybe you're not so welcome.
Okay, well.
All right.
This has been an emotional roller coaster.
They are. Everyone is welcome. I'm going to see how welcome you are, depending on what story you've brought. But my understanding is it is one of our mutually shared favorite subjects at this point, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg's great affection and symbolism in the collars that she wore in her robes. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I think at this point, you know, if you see a piece of art that just has this famous collar, you don't even have to see her face, and
right.
You know who is represented, RBG. So the New York Times just did a piece about how symbolic and significant the collars that she wear are, which I got a little taste of you as well. We both watched the documentary about her. What's it called?
Notorious RBG?
That's right. And so you see in the documentary that she has half a closet full of these collars. They come from all around the world. Once people started noticing that she has different ones, people started mailing them to her as gifts. But it started because she is only the second woman to be on the Supreme Court. When she was in law school, you know, decades ago, she was one of the few women in her classes. When she became a lawyer, she was one of the few women in the courtroom. So she's used to being the only woman in a room of men. And so when she was on the Supreme Court, they gave her the standard robe. And it's a men's robe because there was only one other woman who wore it.
Right.
And so in the front, up at the top, that's where the man's tie and his collar would peek through. And together with Sandra Day O'Connor, they decided that they were going to accessorize it in a more feminine way. And that's where the collar came in. And the idea being that you can be tough, you can be strong, you can be opinionated, you can be really smart, but you can also be feminine if that's what you choose to be as a woman. And there was this time, you know, in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, because I think Hillary Rodham Clinton really went hard on this,
right,
where women were wearing these men's power suits, and sometimes they weren't even tailored for a woman's body. They were men's suits,
right.
And this idea that you have to be a man in a man's world, even if you're a woman. And so she was basically saying, I don't need to do that. I actually want to be a woman and look like a woman and have this powerful position. So the other part of this in the article was that she had different collars for different occasions. So she had a majority opinion collar that they describe as a beige and egg yolk yellow crocheted style suspended from a gold chain. So this was something she wore when she spoke for the majority of the court. She had a dissent collar, which was very spiky. She wore that when they said she was reading her spiky dissents from the bench. And she also purposely wore that the day after the 2016 election.
It's so interesting to me that she had made these decisions. And it's funny because I've been looking at, like you have, I've been looking at pictures of her for a long time. And I guess I intuitively always noticed the collar, but I never sort of separated it out from the person. And then when you see the documentary and she actually opens up a closet,
yeah,
and takes you on a little tour of the, because she apparently was getting sent these things from fans from all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, some and many of which she incorporated into, you know, her daily court attire. I like that. But the other thing I liked about it was this idea I hadn't considered. Of course, I hadn't considered this, but that they would just hand her a man's robe when she got there. It
yeah.
was like the U.S. Senate. When the U.S. Senate, when it first started getting women senators, it literally, actually, I think it got its first woman senator before they had a women's bathroom for the actual senators.
Crazy.
They had never even considered it. And then they had to do a big remodel to actually, oh, wait, I guess there's women getting elected now. Maybe we need to do something about this. It's a pretty interesting idea that these very, very male institutions that I think some people forget how recently they were exclusively male institutions.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like a big deal on the surface, but it really is. I mean, this happened, I think it was last year, when two female astronauts who were up in space couldn't do a historic spacewalk together. It would have been the first all-female spacewalk because there was only one spacesuit that would fit a woman of their size.
Right.
And this happens all the time. I mean, I'm not prepared with the name of the book that I did an interview with the author, but she was talking about, you know, it becomes life and death sometimes, the fact that there are only pieces of equipment or
right.
pieces of clothing for women, but they're made for men, and so they don't fit properly. I hope that in the future they start making, we're going to hopefully have a new Supreme Court justice that is a woman. Maybe they'll give her a robe that fits her. I just assumed that collar came with it. I didn't know that was her special touch, and I just thought, wow, sweet doily, Grandma.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I think that actually that story about the legislature in the U.S. Senate is also true with probably every state house in America. There were very few, obviously very few. Now the numbers are, in some states, are almost dead even. In some cases, there's a majority of women. But many of the state houses had to also be redesigned to accommodate women because they just had never even considered the possibility that women could hold elected office, because for a lot of the country's history, women couldn't vote anyway. So that made the whole thing really poignant when she was talking about it, because, I mean, you think about it, it wasn't that long ago when she was appointed to the court. And she was the second woman on the court.
I know. One of the things I thought when I read this article about her collar, because it has so much symbolism, is how that's such a big part of Judaism, because
right.
she was Jewish. But I just heard a piece on one of my favorite podcasts about her. It's called Unorthodox. It's a Jewish podcast. And they had someone just reading this interview that they did with her for a Jewish publication. And she didn't agree with a lot of Judaism because she felt like women were excluded here and mm-hmm. they were excluded here. And she didn't like all of that. But being a Jew generally means that you do have a lot of symbolism that's incorporated in your life and a lot of thought. Like, she was just a very thoughtful person who I think did deep thinking about everything in her life. And that's kind of synonymous with Judaism as well, and like study. So, you know, if you've ever celebrated Passover, we dip parsley into salt water to represent the tears that the Jews cried when they were slaves in Egypt. I mean, it's always very depressing. There's this food called charoset, which is chopped up apples and mixed with honey and wine. It's very gloppy, and it's supposed to represent the mortar when we were slaves. We had to build these bricks. And so I thought, oh, I think that kind of was something that seeped into her, that she found symbolism everywhere, including even what she wore in this collar. I think it's a very Jewish thing to do.
Well, also, it's represented, that collar is represented in some of the cases that she brought. When, for example, a woman in the Air Force couldn't get housing allowance because they had not considered that a woman would actually be the person as a bread earner needing the housing allowance. And they literally had it written that male servicemen members get it, but women couldn't because women didn't hold many specific jobs. And until they did, she had to help force the military to rewrite these laws. So it makes complete sense. She probably saw that robe coming before she got one and knew exactly what she was prepared to do when she got one, because she had to modify, you know, so many American laws to accept women. Modifying a robe was sort of a nice little capstone on a lot of that.
I bet it's partially also a little bit to do with, you know, I didn't go to Catholic school, but if you had to wear a uniform, you're always looking to show a little bit of your personality in any way that you could.
Well, that's a very good point.
You know, sometimes people will wear a brooch, or you had told me off the air about who was the judge who had the four gold stripes.
Oh, so William Rehnquist, this is not just women who did this, but William Rehnquist, when he became Chief Justice, he decided that the Chief Justice needed a robe that was sort of delineated from the other justices' robes. So he added,
so he got like out
four,
his fluffy paint.
He got out four gold bars and had them like where you'd put epaulets on his sleeves. He had those put on only the Chief Justice's robe.
I think
so.
That's
you
weird.
Knew. I thought that was a little bit weird because that's a status thing.
Yes.
That seems sort of odd. What she was trying to do was just like, hey, I don't need to wear the robe that you built for men. You can also build one for someone else.
Well, I don't know what's up with trick-or-treating this year, but I know there's going to be a million RBGs for Halloween costumes. And I look forward to seeing the little babies, the 6-month-olds with their collars.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks.
Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking with Dave McKenna, one of the best sports writers in the country, about Elgin Baylor, the best athlete out of Seattle you may not have heard about if you're young. And if you're older, you remember Elgin Baylor as the finest basketball player who maybe ever existed in Seattle. Took the Seattle University to the championship game. It is a marvelous story about a kid from D.C. and his path to landing in Seattle, coming up after the top of the hour. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you for taking this journey, whatever part of the journey you came on. Thank you for taking whatever part that was. This is the end of the show. And at the end of the show, we give ourselves that chance to just unload that last little bit of stuff rattling around our heads before we go to bed for the night, and then refill our heads with all kinds of stones for tomorrow. Shane, what's on your mind?
I got a very good phone call today from my mom. When I first came up here to Washington, my mom was living in North Bend. After me and my brother graduated, she moved up there by herself and kind of started her own life and ran into some issues. And it brought her back to California, but I found out today that she's going to be moving back up to Washington, so I'm going to be able to have my mom very close to me.
Wow, that's
help
great.
Her out with
that's
stuff.
Very cool.
So I'm very thrilled because I loved having her so close last time, and she's a way more happier person here in Washington, so I'm just thrilled that I get to see my mom come back up here.
That's awesome. That's fantastic news. Frank?
That is fantastic. I got word tonight that a young friend of our family is having a hard time. His pop passed away very suddenly last summer. He canceled his plans to go to college in order to kind of stay around and be around mom. He's taking kind of a gap period. That is not, I think, giving him the direction I suspect that he needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having a hard time. He's kind of adrift. And my heart just goes out to him. I understand why. And I feel very badly about it. And my prayers are that he kind of finds a focus and moves on. But it's a process.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And so that's kind of on my mind tonight, because I wish everybody would just put good thoughts out there into the universe for him.
Yeah, that it's interesting, because my dad died while I was in college, my first year of college, and I ended up getting tossed out of college as a result. Because
you did?
I didn't. I didn't come back to school to take any of my finals, nothing like that, so I finished with a 0.0 GPA. They tossed me out, and then on a hardship, after it was explained, they let me back into school, and I did fine after that. But I can completely understand how someone would drift. It took me a long time to sort of, you know, wrap my head around it, because especially at his age, how old was he? I'm guessing 18, something
18,
like that.
18, and it was sudden. It was like, you know, just boom.
Yeah, what makes it really tough is that you've not really become an adult in your parents' eyes. That happens about 10 years after you're an adult. and it's difficult. I mean, I would love to have gone out and had a beer with my dad, right? I never got the opportunity to, even though I was just shy of turning 21 when it happened. I think I was 20 when it happened. I know I was 20 when it happened. And it's difficult. And so I feel for him. Hope is, like me, at some point, if you got the toolkit prior, you'll return to it and you'll find your way, you know, out of it. Some people do need to drift a little bit, and that sort of gets their head clear and they realize, all right, nothing's going to change unless I change it. And then they start changing it. And hopefully the young friend of your family can find that sort of thing.
Hope so.
And for me, actually, it's just fairly brief. I really dug talking with Dave McKenna today about Elgin Baylor. Elgin's one of those great basketball players that I hope more people would know about. He's a Hall of Fame player. I mean, the people who follow basketball know Elgin Baylor, but his story of growing up in a very, literally before Brown versus Board of Education, when all the schools in Washington, D.C. were either exclusively black or exclusively white, and then on a lark and a promise, gets a basketball scholarship to the College of Idaho. At that time in Idaho, there were 1,000 black people in the state.
Is this the University of Idaho or the College
of Idaho? It was College of Idaho. It's called College of Idaho. This is late 1950s.
Wow.
And he ends up, and they get treated really well. He didn't want to stay in a segregated, you know, essentially segregated southern state, which Maryland was considered at the time.
Yeah.
And then ends up when that school cancels its program after 1 year, and he leads them to this remarkable record they'd never had before, nor since. The Seattle University got a chance to take a look at him, and they were immediately like, you could come here and you can bring any friend you have from Washington, D.C., which then gets Seattle University to the NCAA championship game against Kentucky,
wow.
which they lose by a couple of points late in the game because they called some, I think, unnecessary fouls. But nonetheless, it's such an interesting story. But the main thing is, listen to Dave McKenna if you get a chance. He's so pumped up about Elgin Baylor. He just gushes. And you rarely hear sports reporters can be a hard-bitten lot.
Yes, they
can. His obvious love for Elgin Baylor is so infectious that it makes him great to listen to.
Okay, so that we have to plug at this point the podcast.
Yeah, so you can catch it on the Cairo podcast website. If you look up Cairo Knights podcast, if you just do a search for that, you will absolutely find it. It's easy to go down, and you can even scroll to whatever hour. I would suggest all of them because they're great. but you can find anything we've talked about on Cairo Knights on that page. Very, very easy to find. And thank you for joining us again. We will see you tomorrow. I know they don't sound the way I planned them to be.